John Decker, our own White House correspondent. He's going to take some naps today and get his tuxedo pressed and make sure that the shirt and the tie and everything's good to go for the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner. Take it away, John.
Well, that's right. You know, there's a very small part of the universe that even cares about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I get that, Jack. But it's one evening a year. Journalists who cover the White House get together. The invited guests include the president, the vice president, the cabinet, the Republican and Democratic leaders of Congress, and Hollywood flies in for this event at the Washington Hilton in Washington. And the entertainment this year, Colin Jost from SNL's Saturday Night Live, and I'm looking forward to that. He's so funny. And it's just a fun night. Fun night in which it's off the record. You can have a conversation with a member of Congress that you cover or a senator that, you know, is from your state, that kind of a thing. And I always enjoy it. I'm embarrassed to say this, Jack. It'll be my 28th White House Correspondent.
No way.
Yes way.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. And you know, I happen to think that we don't laugh enough anymore. And I think this is good because we all need to have a good laugh once in a while.
Oh, I agree. There's so much serious things. We talk about them. You talk about them every day.
Oh.
It's good just for a few hours to just laugh and have a good time, for sure.
You know how sad things have gotten, and you may disagree, that even at these dinners, you know, gone are the days of a JFK or someone who'll go in and wing it, because all the script people in the Congress and Senate, everyone's worried about a faux pas, saying something. So even these things, is the president going?
Yes, the president's going. The president will make some remarks.
But humor's not
his strong suit.
I was going to say that, but you and I know even that is going to be heavily, whatever he says is going to be rehearsed and short and practiced, because they don't want a bad social trend. You know, it's like,
that's right.
You know, he's not going to joke about cannibals. He can't really joke about college campuses, the Middle East. The only thing he can joke about, probably, and it's funny and not, it's just surreal, is the Trump trial stuff, the hush money. I don't know what else he can kind of poke at.
Well, I think it's always effective if you do have a self-deprecating humor.
Yeah.
So if there is a cannibal joke in there, I think that would work in his favor.
I agree. Fun at yourself is always good. Having fun at your own expense. All right. We appreciate it. John Decker, our own White House correspondent.
Thanks, Jack. Have a great day.
Senator Lou Dalsandro, speaking of football, former elite number 87 up in the rafters, UNH, one of the leading Democrats in the state Senate, regular contributor on Friday. Senator, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jack. And, I think the draft was really something. And they said there were 250,000 people
there. Is that how
many? The crowd, the crowd was enormous. It was actually enormous. And of course, Goodell gets booed all the time. He gets the boo birds out.
You know, with the money he's making, I don't care if care if he's booed or cheered.
That's right. I think they could boo him all day long. It doesn't matter. Anyway, the draft was really something, and quarterbacks went as predicted, 1, 2, 3. And the Patriots took a quarterback, a young quarterback from North Carolina. So we'll see how that one works out. And they get Jacoby Eldridge.
What do you think? I think that was a good move. You know why? You know who reminds me? They didn't say it. So I'm not an NFL analyst. I'm proud I'm actually saying this. J-Dog, I know you're off the mic there. He might have been Josh Allen of the Bills, because he's this guy. I don't know if he can run like Allen, but he's what, 6'4", 6'5"? Drake May?
Big boy. Yeah, well, they need a quarterback with legs.
Yeah.
Who can run now, and who can take the time to learn. You know, you can't rush a guy right in. I think they rushed Mac Jones in, which was not a good situation for him, and it turned out to be negative. He's off in Jacksonville right now. Let's see how he does down there. But this new kid, Patriots need a QB, and they need change, and they certainly need an offensive line to hold back the enemy. That's the big deal. And since Scarnecchia retired, the offensive line has not been coached as well as it had been in the past. So they need a lot of help there. And we'll see.
Right, let me ask you this. I just want to touch upon something. I spoke with one of the professors at University of New Hampshire, your alma mater in Durham.
Yes.
And a couple of my kids went there. Beautiful campus. About this protest last night, which I'm understanding, I think it was near Thompson Hall. And for the most part, I understand it was peaceful compared to Columbia or MIT or Yale.
Right.
But there were a few things. One of the stories that a professor this morning told me, but he didn't want to come on. He said, you know, we don't know his name yet, but there was a professor there who was referring to the U.S. flag as dirty rag and Nazi flag as students cheered with the American flag. And how much of this is about pro-Palestinian peace versus anti-Israel?
Well, I think you make a very good point. And it seems like the anti-Israel sentiment has received a lot of juice around the country. And,
why?
You know, I remember Vietnam, Jack,
yeah,
and I remember
yeah.
the protests, and history does repeat itself, and I hope we've learned from that. We don't want that. Listen, peaceful protest, express your opinion. That's what education's
yeah.
all about. That's
yeah.
what universities are all about. But violence and negativity are not acceptable to me.
This is what, it's funny you mentioned the 60s, not funny, because I've talked a lot about it. I love to look at history to learn where we're going and where we came from, and you had a very good line about it repeating. I don't know if you've seen it, but if you watch Netflix at all, there's a great documentary on Bobby Kennedy when he made the decision to run for president. I'm surprised you weren't in some of the video, but it was really good because he was, you know, look at college campuses at the time, police and riot gear. But here's my question to you, Senator Lowe, because I understand
yes.
things are a little more raucous at Columbia and Yale, and it's been that way at Harvard, maybe MIT. But at UNH, I have no issue with peaceful protests, and you said that. And if you're going to talk
nope.
about peace in Gaza and you want to be pro-Palestinian, fine. But one of the chants last night, and I don't know if I want to play this because someone was there with audio, U.S. and Israel go to hell, and they kept repeating that. U.S. and Israel go to hell. U.S. and Israel go to hell. Tear down the society. At what point, because Hamas talks about obliterating Israel, at what point has peaceful protest become hate speech?
Well, I think that's the key question, Jack. When does it become hateful? And it's when the other people enter the protest who really just want to create chaos
right.
rather than state a position. And that happens all the time.
Yeah.
That's why we got to be very cautious about this. Peaceful protest is important. Listen, university campuses are where the dialogue should take place. That's what universities are all about. And I think you should state the case.
Yeah.
And the case is pretty clear in many instances, but indeed, let's not have the savagery of the 60s. It was depressing to me when I think back about it. I think of my students, I think of my classmates and teammates who went off to Vietnam, some of whom did not return.
No, it was unbelievable.
And, very devastating to me, Jack.
But you said a very profound line, Senator Lou. We'll let you go on this. Is about history repeating itself, and I have said on the show quite a bit that growing up in Swampscott, Mass, one of my best buddies, Kenny Perlow's house, his dad Sid, a very proud Jewish family in Swampscott. We were over there a ton because they had a great pool, and they were a loving family and buddy of mine. And his father used to always, when we had great food, good cookouts, his father would always say before we ate, he said, "I'm just going to tell you a little bit about World War II." And what happened to the Jewish people and some of their ancestors. And he said, "I'm not telling you this other than for you to know." And then he'd always say, "Thank God, count our blessings." And the only reason he said it can happen again. So
yeah.
You mentioned the 60s. What I worry about is this anti-Semitism. 6.2 million Jewish people killed during World War II, largely by the Nazis in camps and everything else. Taken from their family, shot in ditches, put in concentration camps,
right.
put incinerated in ovens. This anti-Jewish, anti-Israel thing, I think Sid was right. It feels like it can happen again.
Well, sure it can. You know, it can happen again. That's why you got to put the damper on it. And that's why I appeal to the president. Get this thing settled in the Middle East. Get it settled. You know, get the crisis done
yeah.
away with. The killing on both sides is just awful, awful. The terrible situation when Hamas invaded, and then the retribution. All of
yep.
these things are unacceptable.
Right. Senator, we'll let you go.
There's got to be a better way, Jack.
Enjoy the sun. We'll let you go.
All right. Stay happy. Stay healthy. Have a great, great, great American day, Jack. And thanks for everything. Take care.
Kevin Andigan, New Hampshire Union Leader.
Hey.
How are you?
Great.
By the way, the Fatah, formerly the Palestinian National Liberation Movement, PLO, but the governing group in Gaza Strip is Hamas. But anyway, at least there were no arrests last night at UNH. I talked to one of the professors this morning before the show. Fairly peaceful compared to Columbia you know, what's seen at Yale and some of these schools where the students, a handful, have taken over basically the campus. But, and I asked Senator Lou D'Alessandro this, apparently one of the speakers, and I guess he's a professor, I don't know his name, spoke and called the U.S. flag a dirty rag and Nazi flag, students cheered. And then there was more talk about basically U.S. and Israel go to hell. That was one of the popular chants. U.S. and Israel go to hell. How is that pro-Palestinian?
Doesn't sound like it to me, Jack, but I'm certainly glad to hear that we're not seeing in Durham or, you know, Keene or Hanover the sorts of scenes we're seeing on the nightly news near
elsewhere. Oh, yeah, I am, too.
Because, and if we don't see that, that'll be true to form, I think, for the most part. There have been protests at New Hampshire College campuses, as you and Lou have talked about, going back a long time. But they've not become violent. They've not become overly vitriolic and hateful and all of that, because that's not liked here. That's not really acceptable here, you know. So, but wild times.
All right. What are you writing about? What's going on? I always pop questions at you. What are you covering? What's catching your eye, Kevin? Kevin Landrigan, New Hampshire Union Leader. Go ahead.
Yep, one of your frequent guests, you know, Jeb Bradley, the Senate President, is right in the middle of this legal marijuana thing. Yesterday, we had probably the last public hearing on this bill that's passed the House. Now we're really in the weeds, right? We've got a House bill with 38 pages. We've got a Senate bill with 35 pages, and here comes Jeb Bradley, who's against this idea, as you know. He's talked to you about it a lot, but I will say this, it's kind of why New Hampshire isn't Washington, because, as I said, Bradley hates this bill, will not vote for it under any circumstance. But he came in to basically say, you know what, if you're going to pass this, and maybe you are, maybe you aren't, but if you're going to pass it, you need to do these things to it. You need to make these changes to make it better. And we see this from legislators and governors in both political parties, where, and as I say, that's New Hampshire, because at the end of the day, everyone in public office should be all about trying to make the best possible, you know, even if the best is not what you want. So he came in and had some very specific changes. I mean, for example, in either bill, there's no upper limit for how much THC can be in the marijuana that is smoked in New Hampshire. Now, he said, I mean, there is a limit on the THC that can be in the edibles that you sell in New Hampshire, but not on the smokable product. And the Senate President said, you know, I know we're looking out for the kids here with the edibles, but we ought to be looking out for the adults too. If we're selling smokable pot in this state that has unlimited amounts of THC in it. So that was just one example. And another big change is his fear that both bills, the way they're currently written, could allow a national company to come in and dominate the market. So one of the changes he really pushes for is that no company can own more than one store. There'll be 15 to start. So the Senate bill says three stores. And the Senate bill also says three of any entity. Okay, so that means you can have three stores, and that means you can have three manufacturing plants in New Hampshire. You can have three cultivation centers where you reap the crop. You can have three distribution centers, like a Walmart warehouse, you know, where it's all stored, and then it's then trucked to the stores. As I hope I'm demonstrating, that can be a big marijuana company, right, that has that kind of footprint in the state. So he said, you got to change that, and you got to because for the basic reason is, if you're going to do this, you got to be able to allow New Hampshire farmers and New Hampshire retailers to get into this business,
right,
if they
right.
want to.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, then they're going to be squeezed out.
Yep.
Period. Full stop.
Yeah. What else is catching your eye? Anything else big?
Yeah, the sanctuary city debate is advancing, and the House committee has put its own stamp on its bill. It's different than what the Senate had passed. I think we're headed towards a conference committee there, probably. But that was interesting because you had one Democrat, Jonah Wheeler from Peterborough, go along with all the other Republicans on the committee in support for this change. So it actually is coming out of the House committee favorably, which I didn't think was going to happen. I really felt like this was one of these, you know, no recommendation deals, you know, where both parties were just going to dig in. But they made enough changes that Representative Wheeler is on board, so that's going to come to the House. And as I say, we're probably going to fight that one out as well. Bail reform is another big, as you know, big topic here because it has so much to do as well with the with fentanyl and the overdose. Manchester mayor came and pushed for his bill. Again, it's an important topic, but the two sides aren't together. I mean, the House and the Senate, there's still a lot of space between House Republicans and Senate Republicans. You know, so we're not there yet. We've still got a number of weeks to go before we see whether that's actually going to make it to the finish line.
Let me ask you this one, Kevin Landrigan, senior political reporter in New Hampshire. Before I let you go, it seems to me, and I was going to ask you real quickly, and then I have my question.
Sure.
In the second congressional district, do you think another major Democrat is going to jump in beyond Colin Van Ostern and Senator Becky Whitley?
That's possible. Yeah,
okay.
I think there's still time for that. Sure.
Okay. Well, now the question is, I have in the governor's race. I've noticed, Kelly Ayotte and Chuck Morris.
Yeah.
At least Chuck Morris has tried to engage Kelly Ayotte in some things, whether it's abortion or, you know, supporting president. I don't know. Whatever they've had a little bit of dust, but I think Ayotte's sort of ignoring most of it. But on the Democrat side, interesting engagement, a challenge by Cindy Warmington, the Democrat running an executive council, challenging Kelly Ayotte early on to talk about abortion rights. Mike Dennehy, one of our analysts, said, you know, not a bad move by Warmington. It's just politics. Nothing will happen from that. But we haven't seen I haven't seen Warmington and Joyce Craig engage each other. A lot of engagement between Joyce Craig and Ayotte and vice versa on sanctuary cities back and forth, but not a lot of Warmington-Craig back and forth. Do you think that's going to heat up?
I think it is, yeah. Once we get to the summer and we get past the legislative session, I think it will heat up. You're right. That's a really good observation. I do think one of the reasons for that is I think both of them see the race in similarly, okay, which is, let's go back to Morris and Ayotte. I think Morris clearly understands she's the front runner. I got to turn this into an issue-based kind of food fight, you know, or she just walks away with it, right? Craig and Warmington both see a path to winning their primary. I mean, they both don't think the other is unbeatable right now, you know? So if I stay in my lane and I do all the blocking and tackling that any candidate needs to do, right, before the filing period, get the endorsements, put the committees together, get your issues in line, what do you stand for, what are you against? And then later, like I said, after the filing period happens in June, these two, trust me, going to be continuing to polling this race, which is difficult to do, as you know. Especially in primaries. So if either sees that, hey, the other's getting away here now, you know, then it has to become more negative, and it will. And, you know, if you gave the slight edge to somebody right now, I would give it to Craig, and I think even some of the early polling shows that.
Yeah.
But
all right.
But as Mike pointed out, you know, Warmington is very sharp, and and I think, much like her godmother, you know, Jean Shaheen, I mean, she comes from Billy Shaheen's law firm, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And many of the supporters, much like her, you know, Shaheen does,
when I had Jean,
get negative unless she has to.
When I had Jean Shaheen on, I go, and it looks like your family's endorsing Cindy Warmington. She goes, oh, I'm not, no. And what Billy does was funny. We got to run, Kevin. You have a great weekend.
Right.
Thank you.
You too. Take care.
Kevin Landrigan, New Hampshire. Michael Graham, NH Journal, New Hampshire Journal.com. Take it away, Michael.
Yeah, Well, I'm not used to speaking to an award-winning radio talk show host, Jack. So I'm
sure
very, I'm a little nervous here now that I know that you've been named the best
just
radio
keep,
show.
Just know. Keep going. You know, I'll start talking about country music.
Well, don't you think it's interesting, Jack Heath, a longtime media pro and former program director, that none of the other media outlets who covered the protest yesterday had any audio of what the people were actually saying?
So break it, Michael. Michael, break it down, because some of these specifics may matter. Go tell us some of the chanting.
Well, I mean,
some of the chants.
There are about 100 people there. It was organized by several groups who said explicitly that they want to, quote, end the Israel genocide, and they want a permanent ceasefire. And among the chants that they had were organized intifada. For people who don't know, the intifada was about a 12-year long a program of terror attacks by Palestinians, and involved suicide bombings and stabbings of Israeli civilians, et cetera. And then they chanted, as you just said, U.S., Israel, go to hell. One of the speakers who, by the way, we've asked the organization to tell us who this speaker was, because we know it was a professor, but they've declined to identify him, and we're trying to find someone in the crowd who recognized him. But he got very angry and said, the lives of Palestinians matter more than that dirty rag. And the dirty rag he was pointing at above his head was the U.S. flag. He also called it the Nazi flag at one point. And lots of cheers from the crowd, lots of support. But as you pointed out, nothing like the violence going on the other campuses. Was interesting also, Jack, that voters should know, is that people like Kelly Ayotte, who's running for governor, promptly sent NH Journal a statement, which we have at NHJournal.com, denouncing this and saying that these chants, specifically responding to the chants we're talking about, are, quote, disgusting, dangerous, and unpatriotic. Chuck Morris has denounced the comments. All of the Republicans running for Congress, because this is in the first congressional district, Jack, as you know.
Yep.
So you have three people, Russell Prescott, Holly Novoletsky, Chris Bright, are all running as Republicans. They all went out of their way to release statements saying that they reject this. Holly is actually Jewish, and she says, quote, the anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiment is dangerous. I call on Chris Pappas as our representative at the federal level to put an end to this. We repeatedly asked Congressman Pappas for a comment. He declined to comment on this. And one of the issues that's going to be an issue in the election is whether or not you would support having the federal government withhold some funding for campuses like, say, Columbia or Harvard or MIT if they can't keep Jewish students safe. Several members of Congress have suggested this legislation. Chris Pappas, Annie Custer are no comment on whether or not they would support the legislation. But, Jack, it's so bad.
Yeah.
You know who Schiff is, right? What was it? I forget his first name now. Adam Schiff. You know, big-time lefty anti-Trump guy. He's running for U.S. Senate in California. He released a long statement denouncing these attacks, denouncing the anti-Semitic statements, the destruction of Israel. He's a big-time Democrat. He's speaking out. Fetterman's speaking out.
No, you hit the nail
Where
on the head.
Where are the New Hampshire Democrats?
Well, you
Where
hit,
are they?
You hit the nail on the head. They don't want to upset part of their base.
And what's interesting, too, is you've got State Senator Becky Whitley and Colin Van Ostern. Both, you know, are in a primary. This is an opportunity for them to make some points with the majority of people who support, you know, Israel and don't support these nitwits, and yet they both are no comments as well, while, once again, the two Republicans running in the second district, Lily Tang Williams and Vikram Manchurmani, have both gone out of their way to say these messages are wrong, they're bad, they're dangerous. We need to stand not just with Israel, but with our fellow Jewish Americans. And it's no comment from Becky Whitley and Colin Van Ostern. Why are they no comment? I can speculate that they're afraid of losing votes because Democrats in New Hampshire are so anti-Israel. But until they answer questions, we won't know.
Michael Graham, make it a great week at NHJournal.com. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Aaron Rial, ABC News Radio national correspondent. Best states to get stoned. Good morning, Aaron.
Yes, best states to get stoned. Not going to bury the lead. Lone Star ranked 2024. L.A. coming in first place, followed by San Francisco, Vegas, Denver, and New York. These are all cities where recreational marijuana is legal, and they had a wildly comprehensive category list. They looked at access, they look at bed and breakfast, they look at convenience, munchie relief. And what's interesting is here in the Northeast, we have Connecticut, that New England jumped onto the list there. They're a long way from, you know, appeasing customers' blazing needs. But what's interesting is that this is very much an economic story in the sense that regulated marijuana sales are going to top $112 billion this year. It's a 12% increase from last year. It is a lot of money left on the table for the municipalities not partaking. And also understand the flip side of the argument that,
wow,
frankly, this is also a need for more law enforcement and potentially a need for addiction mitigation. So it needs to be looked at from all perspectives.
All right, Aaron. You can use that idea of bubble wrap, by the way. You're free to use that idea. Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah, I was like, what? Where did that come from?
Bubble wrap. You've heard, you know, bubble wrap, protect the contents?
No, of course. I get it. Yeah.
I think it would be like hotcakes. Any college kid you know that can't handle world politics and history, send the bubble wrap. Thank you, Aaron.
Bye-bye.
Well, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, is coming up, and Rory's going to, maybe Rory can shed some insight. Rory, the latest on the Trump trial, I've noticed one thing this week, Rory. It's been kind of a interesting week, has it not? The big stories, if you do the takeaway, I remember when I was a kid growing up, there used to be this little news capsule between cartoons of, like, you know, a little globe would go and highlight the news of the week. So the big highlight this week would be anti-Semitism protest on college campuses. I think everyone would agree. Even if it's a smaller number of students, it grabbed the news, dominated the news. President did sign a funding package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. But the Trump trial. And one network in particular, the letters begin with C and end with N. One network, I've been watching it all week as I have monitors in my studio. It's been 24/7 non-stop coverage of Trump's trial. Like, nothing else is going on in the world. Nothing else is going on. No inflation. I was at the gas station yesterday filling up my vehicle. It's almost $3.60 a gallon. No one's talking about that. Mental health crisis in America, anxiety, depression, addiction. No one's talking about that. The only thing, according to this one network, is Trump's hush money case 24/7.
Yeah, it's gotten a bit out of control. Christopher Glenn, by the way, a little flashback to the In the News.
In the News, CBS. It was called, yeah.
With Christopher Glenn was the anchor.
In the News, a little music and all that, yeah.
Yep, but hey, I learned a lot as a kid back then, too. It was great that they forced you to get some news into your cartoon diet. But yeah, the network is obsessed, and it has become ridiculous, especially since there are no cameras allowed in the courtroom. It's just, the expense is also remarkable, because they've got 25 talking heads all day long.
I know.
Just saying the same thing.
It must just be ratings, right? I don't know.
It's a crapshoot, I think, because what else do they got? They don't have any other programming that anyone watches. So I think that, you know, why not this, since nothing else? But I thought the Supreme Court stuff yesterday was fantastic. So 3 hours of that was interesting to hear, those oral arguments about the immunity claim by the former president. Mm-hmm. And really the justices breaking it down with, well, you know, maybe on personal things, there's no immunity. But what about his actions in office? Some of those should be protected. So a little bit of back and forth there.
All right. Thank you, Rory O'Neill. Make it a great week at NBC News Radio, national correspondent live.
Thank you, Roy.
Christina Fitzpatrick, one of the great directors and leaders, if you will, of AARP in New Hampshire, coming in our studios on this Friday. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Well, it is that month of volunteerism, right?
That's right. It's National Volunteer Month, and this week is Volunteer Appreciation Week. So we've got a double-barreled thing there.
Well, you know, talk about the importance of this, Christina, because your organization depends on this to a point. I mentioned Maureen and Easter Seals. They definitely depend on it. Mm-hmm. The Manchester VA depends on some volunteers for transportation, coming in to help veterans get from an appointment to an appointment. Volunteerism is a great thing.
It absolutely is. And there's, for AARP, we have 135 volunteers in the state, only 5 staff people. So the impact that we can have is directly related to the volunteers that we have who lend their time and talent to us to help to make New Hampshire a better place to live and age.
You know, I think, Christine, how long have you been at AARP?
I have been at AARP for almost 17 years. But almost 2 years here.
Wow. Now, talk about your view of AARP, because sometimes people don't hear that. And also, what draws you to this kind of work, your own story, if you will, what kind of fires you up and makes you feel proud about what AARP does?
Mm-hmm. So AARP has a great mission. It is to empower people to choose how they live as they age. So it's all about trying to give people opportunities so that they can live the way they want. So that's why we focus so heavily on issues around financial resilience, we call it, and health security. Because if you have enough financial resources to support yourself and you have good health, you're going to be able to choose how you want to spend your time and how you live your life. So I got involved with the AARP at the beginning because of Social Security. Like, that's an issue I've worked on for my whole career. And AARP, of course, is one of the biggest players. So that's how I first got into AARP and have just grown to really appreciate the mission and the wide variety of things that we do.
And again, I think AARP is so well known. People, I mean, from a branding point of view, congratulations, because nationally and locally, people have heard of it. And it's a great advocacy organization. I also think it's going to become more important in the years ahead, because I think back just to our relationship on this show, more people are aging, getting older, semi-retiring, going back to work semi, but all these advocacy areas you've talked about and fought for and worked hard, whether it was lowering prescription medication for folks as they get older, being able to stay in your home as you are senior and living alone to get some services so you don't have to go into a facility, you know, if that's not what you want to do. I can go on and on and on, but volunteerism, informing voters in a nonpartisan way how to vote and take part. I mean, you do so much. I think it's great. But let's talk a little bit about volunteerism, because what are you looking for and the groups you're working with? And I always ask this question. Some people will say, well, I don't know if I qualify for that, even if it's a volunteer.
Yeah, so we have a bunch of different volunteer opportunities. And so I just met this morning with a group of volunteers who help us with our advocacy at the State House. We have a speakers bureau, so people who like to give presentations, share information, can get involved that way. We have free tax preparation. We have a driver safety program that delivers information about how to stay safe as you get older and driving. And then we have some community volunteers who are putting on events in the community, both educational events and things that are just fun. So on Monday, we have a group of volunteers going to a bowling alley in Manchester. And so it's a free opportunity to bowl. So
J-Dog used to. Christina, you know, the other thing, too, I remembered, you also give out community grants for people who get involved in the community. Talk about the team, because we haven't done this much. Talk about the team at AARP here locally. I know about Pam and you, but tell us, volunteers, full-time, part-time, tell us about your team.
Yeah, so we have 5 people on staff. So Pam Doobie is our communications director. She's fabulous. Then we have Ashley Davis, who is our community engagement director. So she's the one, she works the big, big group of volunteers helping them to do more in the community. We have Mike Padmore, who is our advocacy director, who is, he's just been with us about 6 months. He's on his honeymoon right now. So he leads our advocacy work. And then we have Cheryl Sweet, who's an operations director, who mm-hmm. helps to keep everything going. Then we have 135 volunteers, as I said, and a lot of them are super involved. Super busy with multiple roles.
What do you hear from those volunteers, Christina, once they've done it for a while, like say a year into it? Do they kind of say, well, this is about what I expected, not what I expected, this surprised me, this doesn't, or this is very gratifying and rewarding? What feedback do you get?
We get a lot of feedback that people really enjoy AARP because it's fun. They get to meet other people. I've seen friendships blossom. I've seen people who come in because their spouse has died and they just, you know, they're looking for a way to get involved, meet other people, get more of a sense of purpose. And it's just wonderful to see just how much fun people have, how much how good they feel about being involved in the work that AARP does. And they love it. And we treat our volunteers really well. We really appreciate what they do and let them know that.
And, you know, I have friends that have either done the retirement thing or in the process, and they say, you know, they look for a mission. They want to do some good, and they don't know how to do it. They don't know where it is. And I think people, if they find a way to get involved in the community, it's not a cathartic, but it's probably physically and spiritually healthy for you.
That's right. I mean, there's a lot of studies that have been done about how connecting to other people is really important for every aspect of your health, mental health, and physical mm-hmm. health. You get a sense of well-being and happiness by looking at other people, other needs, rather than just focusing on your own. And it's a great way to develop some new skills. Like, you can share skills that you have developed over the course of your lifetime and continue to grow.
And, you know, we touched upon this, and you may not, you know, we'll do this in later segments, but, you know, we were talking about the Easter SEALs and Veterans Count and our upcoming Make 12 Hours Count for Veterans Count. You were mentioning that one of the areas you want to look into more is, you know, engaging more caregivers for veterans. And you and I talked during the break about that. Can you just talk about why that goal is? I think it's great, by the way.
Yeah, it's in general, helping family caregivers is a big priority for AARP, because it's one of the ways that people can age in place, age in their homes, age in the community, and not have to go into an institutional setting unless their healthcare needs are so severe that they need that. But caregivers themselves need support, because it can be so draining and isolating to take care of somebody who has a lot of needs. We know there's a big veterans community in New Hampshire, and so we would like to be expand the work that we do to make sure we are targeting the folks in the veterans community and their families to provide more support.
And again, I think it's, you may have said it, but what areas, if someone wants to, and do you ever just say, Christina, someone listening, they want to call you, talk to you, have a caller come in and just talk about volunteerism. What's the best way for someone to follow up with that?
So there are two ways that I would suggest. If you go to our website, which is aarp.org/NH, you can find a section about volunteering, find out about the different things that we do, and then there are ways there to contact us about that. The other thing you can do is send an email to nh@aarp.org. Say you're interested in learning more about volunteering, and somebody will get back to you.
I appreciate it. Again, Christina, I appreciate it so much. Thank you. Very nice to come in.
It's great to be here. It's a beautiful studio.
Thank you, and building. And now, is there any other stuff coming up this spring? Any calendar stuff, fun stuff coming up? Anything we should know about?
Yeah, we're going to be, as mentioned, bowling next week. We are going to be in Littleton and Laconia in June, offering some free ice cream and then just like a meet and greet at a brewery to learn more about AARP. And we'll have ice cream in Manchester, Concord, and the Seacoast also this summer. So lots of great stuff coming up.
And again, the website?
It is aarp.org/NH.
All right, Christina, good stuff. We appreciate it. Hope you enjoy the sunshine and some nice weather as we go into tomorrow. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Senator Jeb Bradley, Republican Senate President. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Jack. If I could sing, I'd say you're singing my tune, brother.
Well, it is. We don't think about it, do we?
We should never take New Hampshire for granted, because we're incredibly fortunate to live in, you know, this beautiful state and all the things that, you know, you described. It is a really great place to be a resident of. I'm proud to, you know, call New Hampshire my home, and it is my home. That doesn't mean there are not a lot of other great places in, you know, the good old USA. There are.
Yeah.
But something about New Hampshire, can't beat it.
You think it's out of the question if we could put on the highways, not only live free or die, but if you're moving here from Massachusetts to New York, please remember why you left there.
Yeah. You know what?
How do you think that would go over?
Chris Sununu has summed that up many times.
Someone would complain.
Leave. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. There's always somebody that would complain.
Hey, real quickly, anyway. We had Graham on the other day from New Hampshire Journal. We're talking about Joyce Craig was asked a question on one of those open calls with vote, you know, listener. I don't know, but he had the clip. He did a story on, you know, Kelly Ayotte, because this is heating up a little bit between Craig and Ayotte, and I know Cindy Warmington challenged Kelly Ayotte to a debate on abortion rights. But Chuck Morris is running. Kelly, two of the main Republicans, Cindy Warmington, Joyce Craig. But in the race for governor, Kelly Ayotte is, you know, pointed at Joyce Craig, you know, for her position. What is your position on sanctuary cities? You know, we know what's going on in Massachusetts. Almost $1 billion of taxpayer money in the budget going to support undocumented migrants in hotels, shelters, support, benefits. My point is, apparently, I don't have the clip in front of me. When Joyce Craig was asked by this person, it was not Kelly Ayotte, her position to clarify on sanctuary cities. She said, because you had that vote in the Senate recently, New Hampshire is not a sanctuary city state. We don't have sanctuary cities. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, it's just not true. I mean, we have, you know, Keene, Lebanon, Hanover with these so-called welcoming ordinances. And so, you know, it becomes a sanctuary city, a sanctuary state or city, when you're not cooperating with federal immigration authorities on, you know, detention of illegal aliens when the federal authorities ask for, you know, local law enforcement to detain. And the point I keep making, and it is crystal clear, just compare New Hampshire to Massachusetts, okay? They're spending almost $1 billion sheltering illegal aliens. I mean, I saw a picture of a Holiday Inn that had its entire sign covered with, you know, some sort of wrapping, because they're no longer a hotel. They're an emergency shelter. And guess who's, you know, paying for it? It's Massachusetts taxpayers. And so when you create sanctuary policies, and we've had them in New Hampshire, and you don't do anything about it to, you know, try to stem the flow of illegal immigration, you create an incentive and people come here. And they know that in Massachusetts, they're going to get, you know, housed in three squares a day. Yep. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't want that to be in New Hampshire. And people like Joyce Craig and Cindy Warmington are, you know, they're pandering to the far, far left. And, you know, this is an 80-20 issue. And, you know, Chuck Morris, who I'm supporting for governor, has been very strong, you know, on illegal immigration and was strong as Senate president. And, you know, I think obviously Kelly is saying the right things too. You know, I think Chuck has a long record of it. So there is a clear difference between the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue.
You identify.
And a lot of other issues.
You've been clear in your support for Chuck Morris, former Senate president like yourself. Do you think this race, the primary race, will be close between Morris and Ayotte?
You know, I think there's a long ways to go. I think Chuck is doing a really good job. I mean, look, Kelly is well known, and as a former U.S. senator, she certainly has certain attributes, and she's capitalizing on them. Well, good for her. But so does Chuck. And when you know, you go back to all those things that you just cited, our low unemployment rate, our lowest in the nation crime rate, very attractive for businesses. Well, guess who was Senate president leading the charge on all the things that made that happen? It was Chuck Morris. And partnering with Chris Sununu, who, you know, obviously is not going to be governor in the future, but they got it done. And I think that, you know, as Chuck gets out there articulating the message of success for New Hampshire, okay, he's been in the trenches at $100 a year, a volunteer who's also run a big business of his own with 50 employees, and has made the state a better place. I think that is a very, very good narrative, you know, for my friend Chuck Morris. And you know, it's going to be a good race. Kelly is a, you know, terrific candidate, too.
Who do you think has the edge on the Democrat side, Warmington or Craig? In that race, the primary.
Oh, boy, don't ask me to jump in on that one. I have no idea.
Okay, let me switch.
No idea.
I want to ask you about you're studying hard. We had a guest earlier talking about this whole legalized marijuana for recreational use. Before I do, though, a fun one, because we have some extra time this morning. Tom's off this morning. If you have another minute or two, Senate President Jeb Bradley, Good Morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of an H. Senator, I heard from a group in Marblehead, Massachusetts. I grew up down there in Swampscott. They'd like me to come down and do my show some Friday talking about Marblehead being the home of the American, you know, the birthplace of the American Navy, because there's been debate between Beverly and other ports. And they talk about Washington's secret Navy, the General Glover and the Mariners and Marblehead and bringing them across the Potomac and all this stuff. So I said, yeah, I'm interested. And then they said, we also have heard you talk a lot on your show about the fact that not Lexington, but the first volleys, the first real overt acts of the American Revolution were not in Massachusetts. They were in Newcastle and Portsmouth at the fort there. I said, yep. So I think we should talk about, I'd love you on the show that day. I'll be in Marblehead if I do it from the Marblehead Harbor, but it'll be fun to have you on. But, you know, I want to raise that a little more for education and young people to talk about the history of in Portsmouth and the American Revolution and people like William Whipple. But is there anything officially in the Senate or any symbolic, I don't know if it's legislation or whatever, that New Hampshire is home to the first overt act of the American Revolution? Have you ever seen anything? Is that not even, is it just over in Newcastle?
You know, that's a good question, Jack. I'm not sure I know the answer. I mean, look, we've had legislation in the past. Your other guest is Lou D'Alessandro, my colleague, has been very strong on this, that, you know, teaching civics in New Hampshire, that it should be part of a curriculum to graduate mm-hmm. from high school. Mm-hmm. You know, part of a civics education is understanding, you know, the history of where mm-hmm. One's come from and how our government works and is put together. So a credit to, you know, as I always call him, Captain Lou on this. but I don't have the answer on
let's keep a door open.
Newcastle. But you know what? I'd love to be a guest on your show when you do it in Marblehead.
Let's keep it open. Hey, real quickly, update 2 or 3 minutes on what your take is on this, you know, the legalizing marijuana for recreational use, where it's at.
So, I mean, I think it's in flux. You know, I just want to be clear. I don't support legalizing marijuana for a number of reasons. We're in the middle of a heroin and fentanyl epidemic that we have, you know, tried to combat as a state. Again, this gets back to immigration and Joe Biden's absolute failure. You know, so I'm not convinced that legalizing marijuana is the right thing to do. We've already decriminalized it, which is appropriate, but for health reasons, I'm not there. However, that said, I can count. And I'm not sure that we're at 13 votes in the Senate to pass it, but if we are, I want to make darn sure that we have done everything to have proper oversight, protecting public health and safety. We don't allow big marijuana to get a foothold here, and we keep the black market out of New Hampshire to the extent we can. And you know what? Every state, you look at Maine right now. You've got all these Chinese grow houses, you know, all over the state. You open up the state to marijuana legalization, you're going to get the black market. Mm-hmm. So I'll do everything I can to minimize that. But I honestly, I don't know where it is at this point. There are fundamental differences between the House and the Senate that are going to have to get worked out, assuming the Senate passes something.
Well, assuming it passes, it still would have to get by Governor Sununu one way or the other, right?
Yes, and he's been pretty clear. I mean, for instance, he has said there should be a lobbying ban. I agree with that. So I want to make sure that there's a lobbying ban. I want to make sure that the penalty, you know, for a trace amount of fentanyl is not reduced, because the trace amount of fentanyl is a killer. I want to make sure that, mm-hmm. you know, big marijuana can't own multiple entities to, you know, dominate not only the market for marijuana, but dominate the lobbying effort in the state house, because somehow they'll, you know, try to work around whatever it is. So, I mean, these are big questions. I also think, you know, there should be a potency limit on THC products. These are things that hopefully there are enough senators that, you know, will vote to have these kind of provisions in a bill.
We'll see. Good luck. Good luck with the yard sale in Wolfboro this weekend. Thank you, Senator.
All right, Jack. Take care. Thank you.